Well, welcome to our segment two, and this is where we do our Bible study, as you just heard, with our Bible study teacher, Beth Seifert. Beth, thanks for joining us.
Hey there, Amy. Yesterday, we saw Shimei, who came along the road to talk to David as he was entering into the city after defeating Absalom. And today we're going to see two more people who come along the road to meet with David as he's entering into the city before he's even made it back home. So if you have your Bibles, go ahead and open to 2 Samuel. We'll be in chapter 19, verses 24 through 43. And Mephibosheth, the son of Saul, came down to meet the king. He had neither taken care of his feet, nor trimmed his beard, nor washed his clothes, from the day the king departed until the day he came back in safety. And when he came to Jerusalem to meet the king said to him, "Why did you not go with me, Mephibosheth?" He answered, "My lord, O king, my servant deceived me, for your servant said to him, 'I will saddle a donkey for myself that I may ride on it and go with the king.' For your servant is lame. He has slandered your servant to my lord the king. But my lord the king is like the angel of God. Do therefore what seems good to you. For all my father's house were but men doomed to death before my lord the king. But you set your servant among those who eat at your table. What further right have I then to cry to the king?" And the king said to him, "Why speak any more of your affairs? I have decided, you and Ziba shall divide the land." And Mephibosheth said to the king, "Oh, let him take it all, since my lord the king has come safely home." Now Barzillai the Gileadite had come down from Rogalim, and he went on with the king to the Jordan to escort him over the Jordan. Barzillai was a very aged man, 80 years old. He had provided the king with food while he stayed at Mahanaim, for he was a very wealthy man. And he said to the king said to Barzillai, "Come over with me, and I will provide for you with me in Jerusalem." But Barzillai said to the king, "How many years have I still to live that I should go up with the king to Jerusalem? I am this day 80 years old. Can I discern what is pleasant and what is not? Can your servant taste what he eats or what he drinks? Can I still listen to the voice of singing men and singing women? Why then should your servant be an added burden to my lord the king? Your servant will go a little way over the Jordan with the king. Why should the king repay me with such a reward? Please let your servant return, that I may die in my own city near the grave of my father and my mother. But here is your servant Chimham. Let him go over with my lord the king, and do for him whatever seems good to you." And the king answered, "Chimham shall go over with me, and I will do for him whatever seems good to you, and all that you desire of me I will do for you." Then all the people went over the Jordan, and the king went over, and the king kissed Barzillai and blessed him, and he returned to his own home. The king went on to Gilgal, and Chimham went on with him. All the people of Judah and also half the people of Israel brought the king on his way. Then all the men of Israel came to the king and said to the king, "Why have our brothers the men of Judah stolen you away and brought the king and his household over the Jordan and all David's men with him?" All the men of Judah answered the men of Israel, "Because the king is our close relative? Why then are you angry over this matter? Have we eaten at all the king's expense, or has he given us any gift?" And the men of Israel answered the men of Judah, "We have 10 shares in the king, and in David also we have more than you. Why then did you despise us? Were we not the first to speak of bringing back our king?" But the words of the men of Judah were fiercer than the words of the men of Israel. Okay, here we have interactions number 2 and 3 to start with. Mephibosheth comes to the king, and he wants something too. He wants to be reinstated to his position before David left. Remember, Ziba came to David as he was leaving the city and managed to get his hands on Mephibosheth's property. David didn't have time then to make an informed decision, and he doesn't now either. But the description of Mephibosheth here shows him to be truthful. His very appearance, with his long hair and beard and nails, show that he has been acting as one who is mourning for a long time. Yet David's question's a little odd. Mephibosheth can't walk, remember? Still, as he asks this question, you know that he is thinking about what Ziba said and the reason why Ziba claimed that Mephibosheth didn't come to see David, because Mephibosheth was supposedly going to try to make a grab for the throne. Mephibosheth has a reasonable excuse for why he couldn't come sooner. He can't walk. Mephibosheth also tells David that he mourned David's departure and when Absalom took the throne, and he puts himself into David's hands for whatever David wants to do. I can just hear David sigh. He doesn't want to deal with this. This is the second person who has come to him because they want something, and he isn't even home yet. David just stops Mephibosheth and just makes them divide the property. Ziba isn't punished for slandering Mephibosheth, as David appears to be inclined to show mercy here. And Mephibosheth's concern is for David here. He shows his true loyalty as he is willing to let Ziba have all the land, as long as David knows that Mephibosheth does love him and has always been on his side. Mephibosheth most likely still keeps his half the fields. This may have been a test of Mephibosheth's loyalty. Would he protest and insist that he get to keep all the land? Or would he be satisfied with half? Mephibosheth passes this test with flying colors. And now we come to the third person who comes to David, as David returns to Jerusalem. Barzillai. Barzillai is the only one of the three who comes to David without an agenda. Notice who it is that is the first one to speak. David. David welcomes this man who provided for him while he was in Mahanaim and invites him to come live in the palace with him, where David can return the favor and provide for Barzillai. I imagine David was a fantastic and gracious host. When you were invited to be with David, you were invited to enjoy the best food, entertainment, and comforts that the land could provide. Yet Barzillai refuses. He's old and he doesn't need anything. He kindly lets David know that he appreciates the offer, but it would be wasted on him. He does, however, send one of his sons along with David and asks that whatever David would do for Barzillai, he do for this son instead. And David accepts this replacement, but he still promises to do for Barzillai himself whatever he wants or needs. Notice this interaction. The first two interactions were with people who came to get something. They came to David and they couldn't wait to plead their cases. Barzillai? Barzillai is a friend of David's. He's a man who cared for David while David was fleeing from his own son, Absalom. Barzillai was there to give David strength and rest and to just take care of David's needs. Barzillai treated David as his king, which is what David was. Thus, when David sees Barzillai coming, you can almost see his hunched shoulders lift, his eyes light up, and a smile return to his face. He's glad to see this man coming. There's no rebuke upon his lips for this man. David is ready to bless this man abundantly, because this man showed true friendship and honor and respect to David. Remember, if Absalom had won the battle, Barzillai would probably have been put to death for helping David. Barzillai took his own life in his hands to take care of his king, but he did it anyway. David is now once again in a position to repay that, and he's ready to do just that. This chapter ends on a little bit of a sour note. Remember, David hasn't even made it to Jerusalem yet. He still isn't even home. He's now been approached by two requests for mercy and one friend, and now the men of Judah and the men of Israel are bickering again. Now, David was from the tribe of Judah, thus they have a very legitimate claim on him and on keeping him safe. But Israel, however, is cranky. They claim an even greater share of David than Judah has, basing this on the fact that David was chosen to reign instead of Saul, who is from one of the tribes of Israel, with Benjamin, and they also claim a tenfold interest in David. Basically, they're claiming all of the tribes, except the tribes of Judah and Simeon, as that of the 10 tribes of the 12 of Israel. And those 10 tribes were of Israel, and the other two were of Judah. So they're saying, we have 10 times more claim than you two little bitty tribes over there of Judah. Seriously? The men of Israel were the same ones who backed Absalom instead of David. So the tribes of Judah can come back with more force against them. They were all united under David. They had all put aside all this nonsense after Saul died and accepted David as king. But now, tribe and clan loyalties strike again. Here we are looking at the start of one final conflict and contestation to David's throne. Man, it never ends, does it? When it rains, it pours. Just when David sees the light at the end of the tunnel, a freight train comes barreling toward him. Have you ever been there? You've had enough. You can't possibly take any more, yet here you are being handed more to deal with. You've all probably heard, God will not give you anything more than what you can handle. And as we've discussed in the past, that's not true. The verse that is taken out of context there is 1 Corinthians 10:13, which says, no temptation has overtaken you that is not common to man. God is faithful, and he will not let you be tempted beyond your ability, but with the temptation he will also provide the way of escape, that you may be able to endure it. That verse is dealing specifically with temptation, and it cannot be applied to band-aid whatever you want it to cover. We see at the start of Paul's second letter to Corinthians that actually, Paul and his companions found themselves burdened beyond what they could bear. They were sure they were facing death, and yet, even as Paul says in 2 Corinthians 1:8 that they despaired of life itself, the very next sentence Paul proclaims that this suffering and burden was placed on them by God to make them rely more fully on God, not on themselves. Here's the thing, there will be things in this life that will be more than you can bear. There may be lots of things that will overwhelm you, but nothing, and I mean nothing, overwhelms or even surprises God. And if you have His Holy Spirit indwelling you, if He lives inside of you, you're grafted into His family. That means that your hope is not in yourself, but in God, and your trust is in God to do His will for His glory and for His purpose. Rely on Him. Let Him be in charge. When we are weak, He is strong. Give Him the chance to shine through you. Quit trying to control everything and trying to take credit for everything. You can't do it. Remember, we are here to bring glory to Him, not ourselves. It's not much good if people look at you and say, I don't know how you got through that, and you recount how your self-control or your optimism saved the day. Recount instead the reality that you got through that, whatever it was, because God got you through it, not because of anything you did. So I'm going to leave you with an encouraging reminder from Paul. And this is my prayer for you and for me today. It's from 2 Corinthians chapter 4, verses 7 through 11. But we have this treasure in jars of clay to show that the surpassing power belongs to God and not to us. We are afflicted in every way, but not crushed. Perplexed, but not driven to despair. Persecuted, but not forsaken. Struck down, but not destroyed, always carrying in the body of the death of Jesus, so that the life of Jesus may also be manifested in our bodies. For we who live are always being given over to death for Jesus' sake, so that the life of Jesus may also be manifested in our mortal flesh.
Well, thank you, Beth. And Beth's study guides, as well as the 10-minute podcasts of these presentations, are all available in our archives under the Bible Studies tab of our website, naomistable.com. Nancy and I will be back with more on this in just a moment.